The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is the, technically our first episode on Blog Talk Radio for the Hixie and Chris on Sports. My name is Chris Asbrock. I am your host here tonight, and I'm actually waiting to connect with Scott Hicks. You guys know you guys have seen us on our YouTube show and everything like that we've done. But yeah, we decided to, you know, to kind of go on and kind of hit this way instead. So, YouTube, is great. And, don't worry, we're definitely going to be back with all that. But, we just thought it would be a good idea to kind of head this way and just kind of, like I said, take some calls and everything like that. We got a couple things we want to tackle first. Overall, like I said, it's been a while. We apologize for that. It's just, schedule-wise, it's tough. It's very, very tough. But, luckily we've been able to, to get it done, get past all that. And now we're going to be able to reach out to you guys here today. Or tonight, I should say, or however you guys are going to listen. It's been a while, so obviously, we're maybe a little rusty. But we are actually brought to you by, Caledonia Chic Designs. It's a Cincinnati-based jewelry company offering fashion forward, for men and women. It's unique and affordable jewelry designs. Each piece is handmade, so one of a kind. Custom orders are welcomed. She will ship, worldwide. So make sure you check that out. You can check her out on Facebook, Caledonia Chic Designs, .com, or like I said, on Facebook as well. Caledonia Chic Designs, great stuff. Like I said, great product. Don does a fantastic job, and everything she does. So it's fantastic. Make sure you check it out. Mother's Day's around the corner. Get something for your, for your missus. It's fantastic stuff. I'm telling you, check it out. Like I said, she'll ship, worldwide as well. But everything is, it's custom made, so it's fantastic. So make sure you check that out. We're lucky enough that we've partnered with her. So, like I said, it's good stuff. I'm just waiting to hear from Hixie. I know we were just talking a little bit before the show, so hopefully he'll be able to connect here soon. Basically, what's on the docket here tonight, we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Reds. I have not been able to get a preview up, this year, on the website, PhillyImpactSports.com. It's been very tough, like I said, schedule-wise between work and coaching baseball and everything like that. Very, very tough. So, unfortunately, it's been a while. But with that being said, I wanted to get out here and kind of talk. I was hoping to get Zach Ballard on from Reds Chat. You guys may know him. You may follow him on Twitter as well. Reds, I think it's Reds Chat 2016. He does a great job. He's obviously been on here numerous times. He's one I was hoping to get on, but our schedules just couldn't match up, for tonight for him to come on. I'm hoping to get Charlie Moulet on from DoubleGSports.com out of New York City. Charlie does a fantastic job. I've worked with him a little bit. With a previous website, I believe. He does fantastic work for Double G Sports. He was actually just in he was just in Boston for the Blue Jays Red Sox series this past weekend, and which is actually going to be concluding today. But I talked to him a little bit. Like I said, he does a fantastic job. I'm hoping to hear, hoping he will be able to join us tonight. If not, that's the plan, but I'm still waiting to see if I can get from Hixie here. Let me see if I can get him back on, hopefully here soon, so we can, have a little episode of Hixie and Chris on Sports. But like I said, it's been tough for me to get any sort of preview out. for the Cincinnati Reds. Unfortunately, it's just been, it's been tough, and, you know, it's been very, very tough. So, you know, with that being said, though, hoping to get something out, but I had a couple things, you know, I'm still trying to work on. The, you know, obviously, you know, with FC Cincinnati, you know, the brand new USL soccer team in the area, which I have to give a massive shout out to. They did a phenomenal job getting over 20,000 fans packed in the Nippert Stadium last night for their River City rivalry game against Louisville City FC. Unfortunately, FC Cincinnati, you know, dropped the decision 3-2. But regardless, you know, 20,000 fans, you know, packed in the Nippert Stadium for a great soccer game. You know, you can't ask much, you know, you can't ask for much more than that. You know, like I said, they were able to, you know, pack that crowd in. And, you know, their home games are on TV and you're still getting that, which is fantastic. You know, so, you know, well done by the boys there. You know, they just do a phenomenal job. So I'm going to, let's see here. I'm trying to get, I'm talking to Hicks right now here, trying to hopefully get him back on here. Let's see. Man, good old technology. Hicks, if you're listening, buddy, my bad. I typed in the wrong address for you. Let's see. Let me reach out to him here real quick. But, yeah, okay, now with it being live radio, here we go. We're back. Hopefully you should be joining me here soon. But, yeah, like I said, massive props to the crew at FC Cincinnati, Coach John Harkes, you know, Jeff Burden, who's, you know, president GM, obviously, you know, the Linder family, who's got the backing of FC Cincinnati. They've just done just a phenomenal job, and I couldn't be more proud of them. You know, it's just great, great stuff. So I got to give them props. So looks like we got a caller here. Let's see here. Let's see. Thank you for calling Hicks and Chris on Sports. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, is this Chris?
Yes, it is.
Hey, this is Charlie. What's going on, my man?
Hey, Charlie, how you doing, buddy?
How are you, man?
Hey, I'm not too bad. Not too bad at all. Thank you so much for calling in. I'm still waiting on my co-host here, but and you've got a lot in your plate, buddy. This is you know, I saw, you know, if you follow Charlie on Twitter, you know, he does a great job. You know, like I said, you do a fantastic job doing, you know, covering, you know, the Yankees. Obviously, you know, they're your team. You were just in Boston last couple of days checking out the Jays and Red Sox. Well, you know, what did you think of that series so far in the first couple games that you were able to watch?
You know what, I tell you, the Blue Jays are, I mean, minus all the strikeouts, everyone's making a big deal of the strikeouts, but today they had 14 hits. I mean, their entire lineup won through about six. I mean, it's special, man. I mean, I haven't seen something that good in a long time. It's almost like the Mets pitching rotation is like their lineup. You know, it's incredible with Donaldson, Batista, Encarnacion, Tulowitzki, even Pilar had three hits tonight. It's never ending. I mean, it's a constant battle. And, you know, they threw the series against the Red Sox, but, I mean, today and yesterday as well, I mean, when Donaldson hits the ball, man, it jumps off his bat like I've never seen before. So, you know, I'm impressed. I'm impressed with both teams. The Sox look, you know, okay, but the Blue Jays are still the team that beat the AL East, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, Charlie, I mean, they've, you know, the Blue Jays, and actually we're joined here by Hicksy now. Hey, Scott, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Chris. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. Not too bad, man. That was my fault. I'm the reason why you could not get connected on earlier. But we are actually on the phone now with Charlie Moulet from DoubleGSports.com. So I wanted to bring him in, considering I'm the one that messed that part up and sent the didn't complete the correct address for you, so I apologize for that. Charlie,
right,
back
Charlie,
to you, man.
How you doing?
So with, you know, okay, back to the Blue Jays. I know that you know, there was much ado about, you know, right at the end of the season when they were, you know, basically when that series ended against the Royals, you know, they had looked, and, you know, all the talk was, you know, David Price, and if they were going to be able to re-sign him. Obviously, with Alex Anthopoulos, who I'm a big fan of, I liked him a lot. With him, you know, separating from the club and then bringing in Mark Shapiro and everything like that, you know, basically the Cleveland Indians front office is kind of what it seemed like.
Right.
There was much to do about, you know, they did not bring in or didn't even make an offer to David Price. One, were you, you know, you being an AL East guy, how stunned were you at that? And, you know, with them not able to, you know, basically not bringing him back, what kind of power shift did you kind of see in the AL East based off of that move alone?
You know, it was shocking because when they acquired Price last year, they went on a tear. I mean, it was him and Tulowitzki, but when they picked up Price, I mean, he was going to win every 5 games. I mean, he was fantastic on the stretch for them. He really, I mean, being the Yankees guy, I mean, they really didn't have a chance. I mean, they pulled within 3 games, 2 games, you know, and then all of a sudden it was back up to 7 within a week. So, you know, with David Price, you know, he had such an impact on them. And again, you know, $217 million for a guy that's 30 years old is a lot of money. But, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't even make an offer. For a guy that would come in and change, you know, change the whole outlook of a team midway through the season, and then, you know, not even make an offer was really strange to me. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at a couple, a couple of publications out there, you know, looking at, kind of how they were going to slate, you know, the teams, and how they were going to finish, and unfortunately. I think a lot of people had, and I was kind of surprised by this, that, you know, they kept the Blue Jays still off top. And honestly, I did the same. Like I said, you know, for my site, I didn't get a chance to put anything out there, you know, in regards to how just schedule-wise, how I was going to pick all the divisions. But I'm not looking at it right now, what I was going to do. I mean, I got the Yankees finishing first. I thought that even though, you know, and I heard it, I believe I heard it on one of the Blue Jays broadcasts on my way home after one of our games. This is not a typical Yankees club. You're used to the big name players, everything like that. They're very young. Like, they've got a really young team. So it's kind of different. I think with having Tanaka back, I think that's going to add a lot. But then obviously, the moves they made in the bullpen, I think, once it gets to the sixth inning, it's game over, in my opinion. I think they've got by far the hammer in the back of the bullpen. I mean, you can't ask for much more as a coach than having someone like that. You know, I just think that's huge, having a back end of the bullpen like they do. So that's why I picked them to finish first. And then I had the Blue Jays as the number two team in that division. I think I've got them finishing – I got them finishing just ahead of Boston. I think that offense is just so – I mean, they're loaded, absolutely loaded.
Right.
They brought
everyone
back.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, like I said, not having Price, but I think they've got – I think the Blue Jays have what it takes pitching-wise to stay in there. But, you know, when you look at the Yankees now, I guess kind of my thought is, like, what's going to be their biggest Achilles heel moving forward in this season? It's going to be a battle, I personally think, between the Red Sox and Jays. And the Yankees as well, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing with the Yankees is what they really need. And, you know, they upgraded the back end of the bullpen fantastically. Brandon Chapman when he's back in May. They also acquired Castro, who started off red hot. I mean, you know, he's going to come back down to earth, but, you know, he's still pretty hot. He gets a couple hits a game. But I think the thing with them is, again, it's been an issue for the past 3 years, and it'll continue to be the health of their big guys, the health of Teixeira, the health of Rodriguez, you know, the health of Beltran, keeping those guys on the field. Also, Tanaka coming back, you're right. But they need innings from these guys. You know, they need games. They need Teixeira to play 140 games or whatever he can play. They need A-Rod in the lineup. I mean, even he started off slow. They moved him down the lineup and hit a home run today. You know, they need these veteran guys that are going to hit home runs and pop the ball. And especially when you look at it on the mound, these guys need innings to start off the season. I think the first week, the only guy to go, you know, into the sixth inning, I think, would be Steve Sabathia, or into the seventh inning. So know, that's not gonna fly all year. Tanaka's got to have quality starts. Eovaldi's got to have quality starts. Pineda's got to have quality starts. You need length. I mean, because you don't want to wear and tear the bullpen so early, where you know they're all out of gas in August, in September. I mean, those are big games at the end, and you know, you really, the way I look at it is if you can get, you know, you have to get at least six from the starters. If you can look at the 7th, 8th, and 9th as the big guys, we also have Jason Shreve in the bullpen, the lefty. It's a good lefty on lefty, and they have this kid Johnny Barbato who comes in and he's throwing 95, 96, and he's getting guys. So their bullpen is definitely the absolute strength. What they need is definitely length out of their starting pitcher.
What would you say is the biggest acquisition the Yankees made this summer, or not this summer, but this past winter for, you know, this upcoming summer?
I think the Chapman deal is huge. I think acquiring him really takes a lot of wear and tear off the chances, because you know you don't want to use him every game for 2 or 3 innings. So you know he'll be fresher, but also like you said, I mean you get to that 7th inning, you got to figure the game's over. I mean it's really shortening up the game. So I would say Chapman is the biggest. Second base with Castro also, because I mean obviously it's a huge upgrade. Having him, I mean, Stephen Drew, they haven't gotten any production out of second base the past couple of years, so I think he's a second, but I'd definitely say that that Chapman was number one move that I was most happy about, regardless of what happened off the field.
Well, you were happy. I mean, I can tell you what, I know Scott, you know, I know he's obviously a Reds fan along with myself. That was a tough, you know, it's been a tough tough winter.
Yeah.
Season one.
Definitely in a rebuilding stage for the Reds. That's for sure.
Charlie, what do you make of Alex's slow start to start the year here? I mean, it's dropping him down the order. He's 41 years old at the end of the year. I mean, do you realistically seeing him make it through next year?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I thought about it a lot today. I mean, they dropped him down in the order already, and I mean, you got to think about it. It's almost the third week of the season, and people are, you know, he's already starting to, you know, see the repercussions of not producing. And I mean, I don't know. His bat looks slow. He's not catching up. I mean, today was a good matchup because Seattle pitcher, I think it's Iwakuma, I think his name is. He doesn't throw that hard, but you know, when A-Rod's getting a 93, 94, 95 consistently, I mean, he's way late. And I think his bat speed needs to improve. I think it will, but realistically, I don't see him staying consistent and hitting, you know, even 260, 270 next year. I don't see it.
So then, what do the Yankees do if he says he wants to play one more year? He's got major money on his contract. If he doesn't produce, I mean, obviously, are they going to let him have a Kobe farewell tour if they're in a pennant race?
You know, that's a great question. If I was managing, I think if you're in a pennant race, down a stretch next year, and you know you got a guy that's designated hitter, that his only job is to hit the ball, and you know he's going to be, you know, 230, 240. I don't play him. I mean, I don't know if that's the case. If the Yankees are out of it or they're in, I mean, you never know next year. But if they're in a playoff position, I definitely give them the whole farewell thing. But if they're not, then I give them the whole farewell thing too. But if it's close between them and the Jays and maybe even the Red Sox next year, I don't know. I probably wouldn't play him that much.
Yeah, that's a tough deal for the Yankees. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it's really tough. But I mean, it's him. It's all these guys. They're waiting for the big contract to kind of fizzle out, but it's hard because what do you do? You know, what do you do now? He's loaded. You're going to sit your $100-something million player. I mean, is that what you want to do? I mean, realistically, it's not what you want to do, but you know, if you want to win games, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, that's tough now. Okay. Now, since he's not producing, like, you know, like Scott had mentioned, who does the majority of like the pressure fall on then? If he's not producing, I mean, that's a tough ask. for, yeah. you know, for guys like Tex and, you know, Beltran, who are the two, you know, two of the oldest guys, you know, on that roster. You know, then they brought back, I believe they did, so they brought back Nick Swisher. Am I correct on that one?
Yes, yes, they did bring back Swisher.
Okay.
He's currently with Scranton Wilkes-Barre in AAA.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, I thought I saw something, and I believe I saw, you know, you had written that as well. But, I mean, so Swisher, I mean, you know, that's obviously not going to be too much of an option. But, I mean, who you know, takes the majority of the pressure now, you know, with him not, you know, producing like he should be?
I'd say the pitching staff, to be honest with you. But, yeah, you know, I guess it falls to Teixeira and Beltran, like you said, but again, these guys are older guys. You need production at like, I'd say Chase Headley needs to produce a little bit more. I mean, Castro and Gregorius need to have solid years. You look at Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury as well. I mean, those are two guys that are in their prime. You know, they need to produce. And in like the beginning of last year, they were producing. They were both hitting over 300, the 1-2. The Yankees were rolling, and then all of a sudden with injuries and slumps, and you know they really kind of hurt the Yankees more than they helped down the stretch. So I mean it's really a team thing, but again Rodriguez, you know, no one's going to make up for 33 home runs or whatever he had last year. So you know you just got to find other ways to get runs across and maybe stop relying so much on the home run ball, rely like you know almost like the Kansas City style, which they emulated in the bullpen. You know, in the offense where they, you know, get on, you steal a base, you get them over, and you get a sack fly. You know, so it's more of a team than anything else. It's tough to replace a guy like that.
Yeah, that is a very tough. That's a tough ask. I mean, he did get the home run today. I believe that's the second of the year. In their game today. But you know, I mean, overall, I mean, they were able to, you know, to work out, you know, and get a win today over Seattle, you know, 4-3. But, I mean, you got guys who are producing, you know, Ellsbury with a hit today, Gardner with three hits today. So, you know, obviously you know what you're going to get from Brett Gardner.
Right, yeah.
You know, A-Rod had, you know, one hit. But, you know, overall, it's – I mean, like you were talking about, you know, Gregorius is one that I think there's a lot of pressure on him as well, obviously, for, you know, playing shortstop, obviously, after, you know, Derek Jeter.
Right.
But, you know, he's batting so far early on in the season, 222. I mean, if you would go up and down their, you know, their roster, you know, Jacoby Ellsbury, you know, he's the table setter, 213 average. You know, A-Rod only
right.
one batting 118. And, I mean, that's tough. That really
yeah.
puts the team, you know, behind the eight ball, really, you know, if you're
right.
you know,
yeah.
starting off like that.
Right. Yeah, you know, you said it exactly right. You go up and down the lineup. I mean, even last year, I was going up and down the lineup, and you see the home runs are there, but the averages are not there. And people do say, you know, the average is overrated in today's game, which could be the case. But I mean, you need to have at least a couple guys hitting over 300. I mean, Ellsbury is the table setter. You're going to be Brett Gardner is going to be consistent. He is always consistent, but you know, you're going to see guys like A-Rod, 188, whatever it is now. It's not. You know, that's not acceptable, especially out of a guy that's supposed to be, you know, your 3-4 hitter and kind of, you know, drive and runs and carry the offense. It's, you know, it's tough. They're in a tough spot.
Hey, Charlie, do you foresee any situation where Chapman comes back and he's not the closer? I mean, Miller in four innings so far with two saves, 9 Ks, hasn't given up another run with a whip of .5. If he stays on this pace, can they really pull him out of the closer role?
I mean, you know, that's another great question. To be honest with you, if I'm Joe Girardi, I'd leave him there. I would have had Chapman probably in the eighth. Even Betances, if you needed the sixth and third, like he could always go 2 innings. But I would have had Chapman as a setup to Miller, especially after a year he had it. Because American League special reliever last year. I mean, it's tough to pull him out of a role like that. But you know, I guess it's you know they're trying to see where Chapman's at and what he can do. And, you know, I'm sure they'll mix and match. If Chapman starts struggling, he knows Miller's right there. So, but, I mean, you know, it's tough to do, like you said. I mean, he was nasty tonight, or today, rather. He was, you know, he's good. He was good today, and he's always been. He's a strong left-hander. And, you know, Chapman and him are similar in a way, but, you know, I'd still like to see Miller there at the back end.
There was talks with Chapman in Cincinnati becoming a starter. Has there been any conversation of that in New York? If one of the starters go down, I mean, CC's health the last couple of years hasn't been that reliable. He's got,
right,
you know, 3 days here to kind of maybe build his stamina up. Has there been any conversation of that?
No, I haven't heard anything. I think it's because of the constant battle between Ivan Nova and CC Sabathia to get the rotations of fifth starter. So if somebody goes down, I believe almost 98% it would be Ivan Nova that comes in, because he has been a starter in the past and has filled in. So as far as Batman, I haven't heard anything yet. I think Yankees are holding their breath that nobody goes down, so don't have to worry about it. But if something goes down, I do think it's Ivan Nova.
Yeah, the Yankees, like I said, you know, early on, they're very lucky that they've got three hammers that they can go to, and Miller, Chapman, and Betances. I mean, all guys who bring it, you know, well within the 90s, you know, mid to upper 90s, I should say. But overall, who was your biggest surprise so far early on? I mean, I know we're only, you know, about 11, 12, 13 games into the season already. Who's your biggest surprise so far, you know, throughout the majors?
Biggest surprise throughout the major leagues, obviously the kid in Colorado, Trevor Story. He's definitely, the way he came into the league, and he just home run after home run. It seems like every day I was getting an update on my phone that he had another home run and then another home run. So he's definitely been the talk, I think, early. I mean, you don't really realize it, but again, you go watch Toronto play and you realize how good they can be. I mean, you watch Batista hit, and it's known, so it's really not a surprise, but you watch them play, and that ball just jumps off their bat. Like, even in batting practice, I was watching today before. I mean, he's got a swinging bat that are, you know, three to four, 5-6 ounces heavier in batting practice, and they're still getting the ball out. And then in the game yesterday, Donaldson and Batista, there were two shots to center field. I mean, these guys are stroking the ball, so I think it's not surprising to me that they are, but the way Donaldson has been able to, you know, take the AL MVP crown and then now continue his tear that he was on last year. I knew he was going to be good, but I didn't think he was going to be, again, that good this year. And he, you know, he's been showing it too. So I'd say those two are the biggest things that I've seen as far as, you know, following and everything else. But, you know, a negative surprise would be A-Rod. I mean, you know, I'm surprised that he started off so slow. He's only batting in the ones, and he's still batting in the ones. And I figured after the first week, it was okay. He'll figure it out, but he still hasn't figured it out. I mean, maybe today was a sign of things to come, but, you know, I think he still struck out twice after the home run anyway. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how things go. But as far as early surprises, it's definitely Trevor Story out in Colorado and Donaldson.
Yeah, Hicks and I, we'll see Trevor Story on Wednesday, as we're going to go check out when the Rockies are in Cincinnati here. So that'll be, you know, we'll at least
cool.
See him play a lot. So.
Right. Yeah.
For the record, I drafted him in my fantasy league, and I got a lot of grief for it because nobody knew the heck who he was. And I had the last week one when he posted 7 bombs, and I won my first week. So I was pretty ecstatic with that. But,
yeah.
Charlie,
hey.
What do you make of Baltimore? I know we've been talking a lot of AL East, but, you know, Mark Trumbo's having a, you know, revitalizing his career a little bit. I just find that a team fascinating for some reason.
Yeah, you know what? I tell you what, 8-2, they're playing good baseball, man. I know it's early and things change immediately, but, you know, the Orioles are, you know, they're surprising. They're very surprising. I mean, I know that they have a decent lineup. Davis is back. Machado's always going to be good. Jones again. But, you know, their pitching lacks a little bit. It does, but to be 8-2, you know, the first 2 weeks into the season, I'd take it in a heartbeat. So yeah, they're another team you could put in that surprise column as far as, you know, hot start.
I mean, you look at their team, you know, top to bottom, it's kind of, you know, a lot of people had them finishing last in the division, at least from what I saw. I mean, I don't think a lot of people gave them. I picked them to finish fourth, just above Tampa.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I still had a little bit more belief than, you know, in them than some. But I mean, like you said, you know, if you look at their, you know, their rotation, like you were saying, you know, you bought them in as, you know, is you know, their guy. You got Dylan Bundy, Chris Tillman, you know, Miguel Gonzalez, you know, guys like that. They're not loaded with a lot of guys, you know, that are, I'm trying to think of like the best way to put it. I mean, I would say like familiar names, but obviously, you know, baseball fans are going to know Ubaldo Jimenez, and obviously the hype surrounding Dylan Bundy. But it's their lineup that they've got, you know, that they've got a lot of big names in there still. And you know, like Hicksy was like he touched on, you know, they did lose today. They lost yesterday. It looks like 8-4 to Texas. They're looking here.
Right.
8-3 is what.
They're eight and three.
Yeah. So there's, I mean, you know, early on they're two games up on Boston, and then three on Toronto and New York. But you know, they were the biggest surprise because you know for a while they had gone on, you know, they were the only undefeated team in baseball. So it was kind of
right.
Like you were saying, they were a big surprise. How much do you think they can really, you know, keep that ball rolling? I mean, you think they can? I mean, do you foresee this team being in this same position, you know, around the trade deadline or no?
I don't. I see the highest base finish in the division. I'd put them if they're getting any higher than third. But again, like you said, their lineup is pretty loaded. And I really like Manny Machado. I think you could maybe not now, but maybe in a couple years. He matures a little bit. I mean, you could potentially put him in the category with, you know, with some of the bigger guys. You know, not Trout and Harper, but you know, he's close. He's got a great arm. He's got great range at third, and you know, sometimes he moves over to short. But you know, the kid can hit it too. And you know, I don't think their pitching will hold up. Like you said, I don't. I think you know that they're red hot right now, but I don't see them getting any higher than third place. When it's all said and done.
For the record, did either of you see St. Louis at this point in the year having 85 runs scored to lead the major leagues in runs scored?
No.
No, I did not see it.
I mean, I expected, I expected those numbers from like the Blue Jays, who I think have the best lineup in baseball, or even the Chicago Cubs, you know.
Right.
But, you know, like you were saying, Hicksy, I mean, for St. Louis to come out, I mean, they're 7-5 right now, but I mean, obviously, you know, they're chasing the Cubs, but you know, they're a lot better than I expected though.
Right.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
they have 14 runs. They have 14 more runs scored than the next team, and that's Chicago. I mean, and for a team that likes to play small ball, I mean, that it's kind of anti St. Louis what they're doing, and it's interesting to me.
Yeah, that's
very interesting.
Very, very.
So let's kind of shift, you know, let's shift leagues here. Let's go over to the National League. And obviously the team that we, you know, that picks him myself are a little more, involved with, you know, the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, you know, there was much to do last year, you know, with the All-Star game coming to Cincinnati.
All right.
And I was a little – Charlie, I was a little upset with the way the Reds handled not this past offseason, but the one before that, heading into last season. I felt because they kind of made some moves to where it was kind of like, well, are we going to go for it or not? You know, and they were in that gray area.
Right.
And my personal belief was with the All-Star game in town that summer, my belief was you take that hype and you roll with it. And go for it, and unfortunately, you know, it obviously did not work out as this team completely tanked. After you know, there were a lot of moves that were made. You know, let's face it. But and then this coming off season, you know, there was a lot, and I've heard from both sides, and I don't know about you, Hicksy, but you know, I heard a lot of fans who are upset with you know the moves that were made. You know, obviously Chapman being dealt, Frazier, fan favorite Todd Frazier being dealt. You know, guys, you know, being moved. And then there was a lot of discussion on pieces that were brought back and whether they were worth anything. As an outsider, as you are, you know, like I said, you know, you are mainly, you know, AL East, you're, you know, Yankees guy, everything like that. What was your kind of perception on the Cincinnati Reds and what they have done and what they have failed to do coming into, you know, this season?
You know, I thought they were a team that had a lot of potential. I thought that with Billy Hamilton there and with Votto and Bruce, you know, I thought
and even Brandon Phillips. I mean, I know he's getting a little bit older, but you know, I thought they were a team that could make a push. I mean, you had, you know, arguably the best bullpen pitcher in the game at the back end. I mean, again, everything that happened is what it is, but I was disappointed in the Reds, especially with the whole Todd Frazier decision. I mean, he's actually from my town, Toms River, and you know, it was disappointing. Even the vibe in Toms River was kind of disappointed about it because, you know, like you said, they had the All-Star game there. He participates in the home run derby, wins the home run derby, and everybody's going nuts. And it's a huge, you know, huge Cincinnati on a map kind of deal. And you know, and then all of a sudden they just get rid of him. He was the face of the fans, I guess. He was a fan favorite, like you said. But you know, I was a little disappointed in the way they kind of handled it. I thought they definitely could have been, you know, something if they would have hung on to some guys, made some maybe different moves. I thought, you know, they could have been contenders, but I guess they decided to go the rebuilding way, and you know, we'll see how it works out down the road.
Well, Charlie, what you'll learn is that's how we do things in Cincinnati. When somebody gets popular and gets shipped out, and the fans collectively get a kick in the junk, and we're left to pick up the pieces.
Yeah,
I think, you know, it kind of, to Chris's point, I don't mind the moves. I think sometimes the lack of moves is what was frustrating, and not, you know, we've had 33 left fielders start in the last 15 years, and
right,
that's more frustrating than anything. We can't find a consistent player in left field. But you know, I think bringing back Alfredo Simon made no sense to me. They got a King's ransom from Detroit for him when he had a year that he had never had before, and nothing
right
pointed in the direction of him doing it again, and clearly he's not. I think the Cueto deal, they got some quality pieces then against Charlotte. And I think being 6-6 with three of their projected starters not being healthy, I'm okay with it. I think they left some games out there. They could easily be 8-4. But I think, you know, all the magic that Walt Jocketty did in St. Louis, it's puzzling the moves he's made or lack thereof.
Right.
Here in Cincinnati, you know, I don't know if you have any insight or thoughts, but it's a head scratcher.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, like you said, I mean, was it right field, left field situation? I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it is a business, and you know, whatever, you know, we obviously have no say in what moves they make. We can just sit here and complain and talk about it, but you know, at the end of the day, I guess they thought it was the right thing to make the moves they did and to not make the moves they didn't. I mean, I know they were shopping Jay Bruce for a long time. I thought the deal was going to get done. The deal was going to get done, and it just never got done. I don't know if you have any other insight on that or what was going on in Cincinnati at that time. But it was constantly being talked about. I saw it all over the place. He was going to go here. He was going to go there. They got him. They didn't get him, and then, you know, he ended up staying where he's at. So, I mean, again, it's a tough time to be a Reds fan. That's for sure.
That it is. I know
it's team though. I mean, you know, Suarez is having a good start here. Cozart batting .438.
Yeah. Cozart's impressed me. He's impressed me. He's hot. He's definitely started off on the right foot. So we'll see. We'll see if he continues.
Hey, do you in New York want J.J. Hoover because he's free for a bag of balls?
See, I differ on that one. I'm a big J.J. Hoover fan. But then again, I mean, he's not getting it done, so I can't really, you know.
You made me as a child, so that's
what
I'm
saying.
What?
So you ain't patient.
I mean, I can't defend him when he's pitching like he is. I mean, let's just be honest here. But you know,
I mean, when hasn't he pitched like this? I mean, what in his career has pointed to the direction of that he should be an everyday closer?
I never said closer. I mean, but that's all we've got. That's our only option. That's the problem. You know, but I never say he's not a closer. I mean, let's just be honest. But I think he's a solid. I think he's a solid bullpen arm, but he's not a closer. I'll give you that. But you know, and kind of, you know, to kind of answer your question on that one, Charlie, about the whole Jay Bruce thing, I did hear that, you know, there was that, you know, obviously the Blue Jays were going really hard after right. Bruce, because he was basically going to be their left fielder.
Right.
But, you know, there was an issue with prospects. I think that there was it fell through due to the prospect. I think there was an injury with one of them, that there was a major injury concern. So that's why that deal didn't go through.
Right.
Which, you know, it's kind of a shame because, you know, if you want to do a full rebuild like the Reds are wanting to do, my thought is you got to get rid of guys like Bruce has to go.
Yeah.
You know, and Brandon Phillips is the other one. And Phillips, he's the one, he hung up that deal with Washington, you know, basically for, you know, contract wise. So that was the issue with that one. Otherwise, he'd be gone. See, that's two pieces right there that
right.
would be gone. That we could have got at least something. Well, God only knows what we would have, you know, what we would have gotten back from, you know, for him. But, you know, you're not going to be able to move a piece like Joey Votto with his contract, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The future is bright, though. If you look at what the Reds have coming back in arms, I mean, you've got, you know, DeSclafani set to come back. You've got, well, Michael Lorenzen, I know, and I keep hearing the Tommy John being thrown around. I keep hearing that, and then which kind of worries me a little bit. But, mm-hmm. you know, he could be coming back. You still got, I mean, Brandon Finnegan so far has looked really good. I wouldn't say really good, but he's looked pretty solid for, you know, for what he is. John Lamb, the lefty, he was the main piece, I think, in that Johnny Cueto deal with the Royals. You know, he's set to be coming back here, I believe, in May, I believe, is when he's set to join the rotation. You know, so there are some pieces that are, you know, pitching-wise, you know, we got some arms in the system, which is comforting. Now we just got to, you know, hopefully get a couple other pieces around it. I think the rebuild could take – I think it could be quicker than what some people are saying if the organization does it right, which is a big if. I mean, we've seen what they've done so far. So it's kind of tough to get, you know, your hope behind them there. But, you know, I think I don't think it could take as long as, you know, some people are saying if they do it right, though. I mean, you got to be able to bring in some of the pieces, you know, to build around what you have now. And,
yeah.
You know, we'll see what they've been able to do. But right now it's tough, like Hixie was saying. You know, we're always left to pick up the pieces after, you know, after a train wreck. Usually it's kind of how it works.
Yeah, you know what, but I think you're right with that. I think they could really progress as far as the rebuild goes. I think they can rebuild quicker. They do have the arms. They just need to get a couple other pieces. You got to get some of these older guys out and bring in some youth guys that, you know, can play. But I know, again, they'll be back. The Reds will definitely be back. If it's not this year, it's in the near future. So I don't think the Reds fans are going to have to go too long without having a contending team again.
I like your optimism. I like that.
Yeah,
we need more of that here.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
You know, what do you make of Billy Hamilton? You know, the guy just, he's been a punching bag around here lately. And, you know, highly touted coming in a couple of years ago when they got rid of Stubbs. And he just can't consistently hit major league pitching. I mean,
right.
You know, how long do you think his leash is?
I think he's a younger guy. I think he's got, you know, he's got this year. He's got to get more consistent. I mean, you're in the major leagues. You can't be, you know, hot and cold. You got to find the middle and stay consistent. I think he's a great asset defensively. I think, you know, when he's on base, he's an unbelievable threat. He's really the fastest guy in the league, but, you know, getting on base, I think he needs to see more pitches, you know, work counts maybe. I mean, what it comes down to is if I'm the Reds, I give him this year, maybe, you know, depending on how he finishes this year, maybe, you know, half of next year before, you know, before we can really determine, you know, is this kid going to pan out? You know, is he going to be our future in the outfield, or are we going to, you know, we're going to have to go in a different direction. So, I mean, I wouldn't jump the gun too quickly. I know it's been a little while, but, you know, I think they at least give him this year.
So I'm gonna throw out a tough stat here. And I don't know what, you know, Billy Hamilton being the speed burner he is, you know, his fly ball to ground ball ratio is pretty high for somebody that quick. I mean, he's hitting more fly ball outs than ground ball outs. You know, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this question, but you know, what mechanically or what mentally do we need to do to change that? I always think of Major League when I see this stat and somebody like Billy Hamilton and making
right.
Do push-ups when he hits a fly ball in the air. I just think with somebody of his speed, you know, you got to put the ball in play on the ground more.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that, definitely. I think his approach needs to change. I mean, you know, there's no need to put the, like, you know, drive the ball in the eye. If he pounds ground balls into the, you know, the 5-6 hole, I mean, I don't see anybody throwing him out deep in a hole. I mean, you got to utilize your speed if that's what you have, and, you know, you don't have too much power. If he puts the ball on the ground at the middle, I mean, maybe more bunts, like trying to beat out base hits, you know, slapping the ball. But, yeah, you're right. You definitely got to put the ball on the ground. You don't have speed.
Would it be unprecedented if the Reds instituted that he's not allowed to swing at a pitch? He has to bunt every at bat?
Hey, I like it. I'm all for it.
I mean, let's be honest. I think he could probably get on base 3 or 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. Why not?
I think his all-base percentage would increase if he just bunted every AB.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
I can't argue that, man. I mean, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating, you know?
Yeah, no,
no,
I get it.
It shouldn't be like that. I mean, like you said, it's the fastest guy in the league. For the love, man. Like, come on. You got to do something. I mean.
Yeah. It's wasted speed if you're not going to get on base. I mean, you got to put the ball in play on the ground.
Exactly. I mean, especially when you have guys who, you know, who are struggling, like, you know, like the Reds are. And I believe I was looking here. Let me see if I can find. I mean, guys like Devin Mesoraco, who, and I heard it on the radio the other night here at local sports talk radio. One of the guys who was talking was saying, you know, he's like, Devin Mesoraco does not look right. He does not look the same. I mean, he's coming in, he's batting 143, and that's, you know, he was able to get a hit today, but struck out twice. He's just not moving like, you know, like we expect him to.
Right.
But he's one guy that this lineup, they count on. I mean, he's one guy that they had to have. You know, that if you wanted to have something, you know, any hope for this team, he was one guy that had to come out and hit well, and he just hasn't done that. So, you know, and then you have guys like, you know, Billy Hamilton who aren't getting it done. But, I mean, Bruce is batting. He's coming right now, you know, at 304, so he's over 300. Suarez, you know, tearing it up, as, you know, as Sixie mentioned earlier. Cozar is doing well. He's kind of continued from what he was last year before he got hurt. But having guys who aren't getting on base, you know, that makes it really tough for every team, basically. You know, if you're a top guy, the guy you need to get on base who causes all that trouble and all that ruckus on the base path, you know, if he's not getting on base, and you're really making it, you know, you're making it tough for, you know, for everyone else around you. And especially for a team who doesn't have as much talent as some other clubs,
right?
And you know, you really put yourself behind the eight ball there.
Yeah, no, yeah, you hit it right on the head with that. I mean, you got to get guys on base for these guys to be effective. I mean, it's a lot easier. I feel like it's a lot easier to hit when there's guys on base, and it's not. You know, you kind of grip your bat a little bit more, and you're more, you know, all right, let's get these guys over, let's get these guys in. So if no one's getting on base, it's tough, especially for Mesoraco, who's a guy, you know, that, like you said, he doesn't look the same. Something's not right there, and I think, you know, it has a lot to do with it.
You know, Charlie, what do you think of Jordan Pacheco? I really like what that kid did in Colorado and Arizona. I know he struggled the last 2 years, 3-0-9, back in 2012 with Colorado. I think a change of scenery might be good. I mean, you know, how long do you wait to give him a chance?
You know, I think, like you said, he's definitely got the potential.
You there? We lost him. It's all right. We'll make sure we'll see if we can get him back. that's a bummer. You know, right before he was, you know, getting ready to talk about Jordan Pacheco. But, you know, regardless, you know, it's been pretty tough for what the Reds have dealt with so far. Like I said, you know, I picked them. Unfortunately, I picked them, you know, to lose, you know, over 100 games. All right, Charlie, you're back on. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
sorry. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, no problem. Right. I'm gonna be going through a tunnel in a bit here, so I might get cut off again. But I'll hang on
as
long as I can.
That works. So, you can get back to your point before you before the call drops.
Yeah. So I think he's got the potential. He really does. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to tell. You know, it's tough to tell. You guys would probably know more than I would. As far as that, but I mean, the kid that looks like he's got potential to play. I mean, I'd have to ask you.
Well, I think he does. I mean, you know, Tucker Barnhart's he's a journeyman. I think he's had a decent start to the year, but I think mixing it up at some point. You know, Mesoraco had very little time last year.
Right.
He just has not. He has not looked right. He's not. He's not comfortable at the plate. I know you got to work things out, but. You know, Red's sitting three back at 6-6. You know,
right.
I think, you know, there is hope, right? And, you know, Finnegan's had a great start to his Reds career.
Yeah, yeah.
8 Ks per 9. He's got a 2.04 ERA, 2 quality starts. And if you get Homer Bailey back in the next month, your pitching staff can stabilize.
Yeah.
I think the Reds are within striking distance. And I'd hate for them to kind of hold on. This kind of goes back to my Billy Hamilton question. But I'd hate for them to kind of be stubborn with some guys, and it costs
right.
them a chance to make some noise or surprise some people this year.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. You're right. With Bailey coming back, I mean, it's the rotation is going to be, you know, it's going to be solid. I mean, you're right. They are in striking distance. It's tough, but with Billy Hamilton, it's tough because he's a guy that you know he's talked about. He's speed. He's you know. And, it's tough to put a guy like that on a bench. I mean, you know, or move him because you're going to get criticized for it. So when he matures as a hitter and makes his adjustments, you know, there won't be any talk about it. But yeah, I mean, you're right though. The Reds are striking distance. They can definitely stabilize that pitching rotation.
Well, one thing that's going to be interesting, and like I said, I was the first one to say that this team was going to lose over 100 games. I just didn't see I thought the pitching would be the Achilles heel. And, you know, bullpen help, it has been. However, though, like you guys were saying, they're going to be getting some of these starters back, thus moving some of the guys who are in the rotation now most likely to the bullpen. So,
right.
Thank
you know,
God.
Some of the guys who are in the bullpen now are not going to be there when these guys, when these normal starters come back. So,
thank God.
You're gonna effectively shore up your bullpen as well, along with your starting rotation. I mean, like you said, Hicksy, you know, they're within striking distance. This team has done a lot more than I expected. And I'm the first one to admit when I'm wrong on that one. I mean, I didn't expect them to be in this situation here. You know, they're in a spot now to where, like you said, Hicksy, but they're in striking distance. When you get some of these arms back, you know, especially with the Cubs. I know the Cubs right now are on a roll. I think they're 9-3 right now. But
yeah,
it's
yeah.
going to be interesting to see with that injury to Schwarber.
Schwarber.
Yeah, like what that injury will do. I mean, he's out for the year. So what does that injury
have a loss
that expect? Oh. I know. But you know, obviously they're not going to continue that, you know. For the next 150-something games, you know. So,
right.
Did that catch up with them later on in the year? And, you know, how does that – I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how all that, you know, lines up. And especially if this team, with this Reds team, with they're young. I mean, it could be one of those situations where some of these guys are just young and dumb. They're just out to play ball. And it could
right.
be dangerous. But, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting. So I like, you know, Hicks, I like what you were saying about Pacheco and what they, you know, what they could do with them and how short of a leash, you know, that some of these guys actually do have, though.
Right.
Well, and I think the crazy thing is, guys, they're 500 and Joey Votto's hitting 227. You know,
I think
that's the scary thing.
Yeah, but you know they've been able to get it, like you said, that is very scary, especially because you've had guys like Cozart picking up Suarez, who's been on an absolute tear, and Bruce, you know, Bruce, you never know what you're going to get with him, but you know,
real affordable, Chris. I mean, you know, there's enough of a sample time, 12 games. You know, obviously Cozart's not going to hit 483 all year, and Votto's not going to hit 227, so those are going to equal themselves out. But no, I think some of these guys.
But the issue with Bruce is, though, the fact that you have Jay Bruce, who he's hot for a couple. He goes on. He's a major streak hitter, and that's what I'm saying. That's where my thing is. You know, he's starting off. You know, Ben, like you said, he's batting 304 right now. You know, what's going to happen when he hits his slump that he normally does every year? I mean, and that's proven. He does that. It happens every single year. He goes on slumps where he'll go and he'll be, you know, struggling beyond belief, but then he'll go on a 2-week run where he's just absolutely smashing the cover off the ball. What's going to happen during those times where he's, you know, not hitting well? That's my thought, though. That's what I'm going
for.
Yeah,
I think the answer to that is you're going to have to get something more consistent out of your catcher position, and you're going to have to get something more consistent out of center field. But, you know, if Adam Duvall or Scott Schebler, one of these two steps up and takes over the field, Duvall's hitting 286 to start the year and 28 plate appearances, and he's having a solid start to his career. He may be the answer in left field. I mean, if you can get something more stable, and Votto starts picking up the slack, I think there's potential to overcome a Bruce slump. But again, you got to find some stability up the middle, and that's where the Reds are struggling. They always say up the middle is where you got to be strong: catcher, center fielder, pitcher, short, second, and Cozart and Phillips are having good starts here. The Reds' rotation is solid, but they have to shore up behind the plate and middle of the outfield. And I think if they can find a way to do that, this team can surprise some people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you be willing to give us Brian McCann? I mean, would that be a good deal for you there, the Charlie? I mean, would that be worth it?
Yeah, I think we're going to hang on to McCann for a little bit.
He's a bum.
You sure?
Right? That's what you guys think, a bum?
Yeah.
What's that?
No. We, you know, I don't know, man. It's I'm trying to think of a word to describe it. I wouldn't give up McCann for him, no.
I mean,
would you take Jay Bird?
You know,
maybe. Don't we kind of have one with, like, Carlos Beltran or somebody else? I mean, I don't think I would take him right now, given
so, but what kind of market do you think there is for Jay Bruce, especially if for the next, you know, say 3 weeks, keeps up this pace and the Reds do fade, like most people predict? If by June 1, the Reds are, you know, 5 to 10 games under .500,
right,
and Jay Bruce is still going, you know, 275 or north, you know,
right,
it be a market for him that early? Or can the Reds pull the trigger? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they actually could. I mean, I think that if, you know, if he's having a heck of a year and there's a team that's on the border, you know, on the bubble here, that could be in, they need to make a move, they need to go get a guy. I mean, I would add up absolutely if I was a team that, you know, had a chance to maybe win a division or had a chance to make the playoffs and I needed, you know, a guy for the last 2 months of the season, I would give to get him, absolutely. I think he's got a pretty strong market.
I mean, he's only 29, and actually I do listen to a bunch of being a Blue Jays fan, I do listen to a bunch of shows up, you know, in Toronto, and I did hear something from I think it was one of the MLB podcasts with Gregor Chisholm, who is the Jays beat writer up there for MLB.com. And he did actually, I think it was right before the beginning of the season, or maybe it's really right, you know, like that first week, there was talk of, you know, some moves that he was basically saying something along the lines that Jay Bruce could still be in play for this club if the Jays are in need of, you know,
right,
someone like that. And so that's
right,
one deal that I wouldn't mark that off as done or gone. I think that, you know, like Hicksy was saying, you know, if you know, especially by June 1, you know, I definitely can see the Reds moving him if they're way out of it. I mean, especially, I mean, last year, I mean, you look at his season last year, he went 226 last year, he had 26 home runs, 87 RBIs. He was on, you know, an on-base percentage of 729. You know, so that's a solid, you know, a solid season there. You know, this year, 3 home runs, 12 RBIs, you know, an 892 on-base percentage. So, you know, that's a good, you know, honestly, that's a good start there, you know, onto the season. So, you know, I mean, Hixie, you know, what would you be doing if, you know, if you're in the Reds front office? And I see, actually, I think, you know, Charlie, he did drop off there. So he was saying that he was going to be going through some tunnels. So he did drop, so I'm looking to get him back on here. But, Hixie, if you're the Reds, what kind of moves would you be looking to make at that time, you know, say by June 1st, they're, you know, they're gunning out? What would you be looking to
do? I'd be calling the Dodgers right now. I mean,
I've done it.
You know,
I've done it back in February. I said I'd have been making those moves back in February, but regardless,
well, of course, but,
you know.
But you know, I mean, the Dodgers have some kid named Thompson in left field. I'll give you a second to Wikipedia him, and you know, and who knows what Puig's gonna do? The guy's a Luskanic solid player, but. So there are other options. Adam Ether is on the 60-day DL. Crawford hasn't started in a couple of years. So your options for L.A. in the outfield are pretty thin. They're obviously going to be shopping for somebody at some point. You know they're going to be in the hunt with the pitching staff. They would have a market. Obviously, the financial aspect is moved out there with Magic Johnson and part of that ownership. So – That would be the first phone call I make is the LA Dodgers to see what kind of interest they had.
I'm 100% with you. The guy you were talking about was Trace Thompson. That's who it is. He was originally, you know, I think he could add a lot. I mean, he's only 24 years old too, so that could be, you know, that could be a piece right there. It could really, you know, the Dodgers, like you were saying, Dodgers have a lot of, you know, they got some pieces that could be dealt and definitely help out this club. It'll be interesting to see what the Reds do and how they actually handle everything, especially these next few, you know, these next couple weeks. It's crucial for them, you know, coming up. I mean, they've got, you know, the Rockies aren't, you know, world beaters by any means, but, you know, they're hanging in there. I believe right now they are. I see where I see them.
Score
runs. They're 7-5 right now, and I mean, when you got, you know, Story doing what he's done. You know, you got Cargo, you got Nolan Arenado, DJ LeMahieu. I mean, they're, you know, it's a solid team from top to bottom. It's going to be interesting to see what they're able to do, you know, in this time, you know, moving forward, especially, like I said, you know, with the Reds coming up here, you know, like you said, you know, or actually like we were saying, we're going to be seeing the Rockies here on Wednesday when we get to the game, but you know, you got Charlie Blackman leading that team. You know, he's the leadoff guy. You got Mark Reynolds. They got some pieces there that, you know, that are going to be, you know, that it's going to be tough for them. You know, it's going to be tough for the Reds, you know, as they're going to be moving on, you know, because after Colorado, then they host the Cubs for a 4-game series, and then they head to New York for 3. So this month of April's tough. I mean, you're not facing too many teams that are going to struggle this season based off of what, you know, what we've seen so far. I mean, like I said, you got Colorado, who's leading the West. Cubs are the Cubs. You still got Pittsburgh left, who's, you know, they're actually in the division. They're 7-6. But it's tough for, for the Reds coming up. So, I mean, we could be seeing some moves here being made pretty early on, depending on what, you know, obviously what goes on these next few weeks.
Well, that was my point. You're going to know by June 1 where this team is. Heck, you're probably going to know in the next 14 to 18 days where this team is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when you're going to be able to start deciding what we're going to do. You know, there's no need to drag this out if you don't have to. And that's my point with Billy Hamilton. You know, You got two guys in Schubber and Duvall. Give them a chance. You know, platooning them in left field may not be the best move. If you can move Bruce for something of quality, put those two in the outfield, start them in left and right field every day, and let's see what we can come up with. And if Billy Hamilton in the answer, let's find somebody else. You know, I think there's no point in being stubborn here. And that's my point with a lot of this, and Pacheco as well. Listen, injuries happen, you know, and sometimes they derail careers, and maybe that's what's happened with Mesoraco. As sad as that may be, he's a great player, a great guy, but it happens. Other people deserve opportunities, and especially if you're not going anywhere, why not?
You know, I'm 100% with you. I thought, and I said it originally, as soon as I heard the news that, you know, what happened with Mesoraco happened, I immediately said, okay, he needs to look at switching positions. I think he needs to, you know, personally, I think he would be great behind, you know, out in, I think he'd be great on the outfield. I think he would be a good, you know, a good piece out there, especially with his bat. That was kind of my mentality on it. He's not going to be the same behind the plate. You got Tucker Barnhart, you've got Pacheco, like you were saying. I mean, we've got guys who, you know, we've got guys who are there that, you know, that can do it. Like you said, I think it's, you know, especially with the short leash. I'm a big fan of Scott Schebler. I've liked what I've seen so far from him. I mean, my guy, he's only 25 years old. So, you know, I think he'd be perfect out, you know, I think he's a good all day, every day player. But, you know, he's still trying to get his
ability too now.
With that?
I think Duvall has that capability as well.
Totally agree. I mean, so there, you know, the Reds are in there.
By May 15th, next 16 games. Like you said, you got Colorado, Chicago Cubs, at the Mets, at Pittsburgh, and then San Francisco at home. You know, these next 16 games, for me, are the Red season. You go above 500 in those 16 games, then you may have something here. But if you go substantially below 500, I think it's time to start doing what you got to do.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say the exact same thing. I think that, and I was funny because I was looking at that exact spot, you know, in the schedule, that right after, you know, right after the San Francisco series, I saw Milwaukee. You got Milwaukee for four at home. You know, Milwaukee is what they are. They're not, you know, there's a lot of talk the Reds were going to be battling them for last. Milwaukee's not very good. But then you got Pittsburgh. Then you got Philadelphia and Cleveland. Regardless, before that, like you said, that is the Reds season. And I am 100% with you on that. I think if you're looking at it and it's like, okay, this isn't going well, it's not exactly what, you know, we expected, you know, the front office has to look at it that way and say, okay, this isn't what we, you know, this isn't what we thought was going to happen. You know, we expected maybe this team was going to be a little more than what they are at this point. Okay, fine. It is what it is. But you have to make those moves to put this team in a better spot and put this franchise in a better spot for the next few years. Because, like I said, I think that if we can get some pieces back, this rebuild will not take as long as some people think that it will. I think that they've got the arms to, you know, to work with and do something with. You know, I don't think it's going to take as long as some people are saying. But, like I said before, it has to happen to where they make the right moves at the right time and bring the right pieces back, and it won't be as bad. And I'm 100% with you. By, like you said, the next 16 or so games, it's the Red season. I'm completely on board with you on that one.
Well, I think this team's overachieving compared to what the front office, they know, for the most part, they know baseball. They know what they have. I think being 6-6 right now, and to be honest with you, they don't blow that quality start that Finnegan had opening night against the Cubs. You know, who knows how that series would have changed, but
exactly.
This team could be 9-3 very easily. That one today got away. you know, I think this team actually at 6-6 is overachieved earlier in the year. And I think the front office recognizes that. And I think, you know, I think that's why they're trying to ride it out the best they can, because they know that they got three arms coming back that are quality arms. And you could have a starting rotation that's five deep, realistically, if not four strong, with the three coming off the DL here. If Finnegan can keep rolling and Iglesias can be as consistent as he's been. So I think there is potential here. If they can just, and again, they got to get the middle of the field straightened up. You got to get something out of catcher. You got to get something out of the center field. And if they can find something, and that's why I would have a short leash with Mesoraco and Billy Hamilton, because there's an opportunity here, and nobody really saw the opportunity coming. But surprisingly, there is one, and I think we have a short window to capitalize on it. And I think it's the next 16 games.
I'm with you. I think that they can, and I think that they can really do something here if they're able to stay in and keep their head above water a little bit. I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot. My thing is, though, if you look at what, and like I said, I was the first one to say that this team is going to lose 100. I said, in fact, I have a bet with my father-in-law that I said they're going to lose 101 games. But you know what? A lot of people, and a lot of people had jumped on that bandwagon with the Reds, you know, that opening series against Philadelphia, you know, they were going nuts. So this is, you know, and I'm like, okay, it was the Phillies. I mean, let's just be honest. It was against the Phillies. But you know what? Then you kind of look at how they've been playing that, you know, since then. Like you said, you know, they took two out of three against the Pirates. Is that correct? I can't remember off the top of my head. They
yeah,
take
they did.
Two out of three. What's that?
Yeah, they did.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. And then I know they obviously, you know, reversed that against Chicago. But like you said, you know, if they don't waste that quality start there from Finnegan, you know, God only knows how that series could have gone. And, you know, so it's interesting. I mean, and then what, they dropped two or three to St. Louis, and then now, like you said, coming back tomorrow against a solid Colorado team that, like you said, is scoring runs. I mean, this is – it's a very interesting time here in Cincinnati. And honestly, like, you know, like you were saying, that they've overachieved for what they believed and what I believe as well. It's definitely an interesting time here at Cincinnati, because, you know, there is that hope, but then there's also that reality that, okay, this is what actually should happen based off of what we're seeing here. But it's weird, because, you know, this front office, they've got some decisions to make and how they want to, in which direction, how they want to move forward, you know, with this franchise. And it's going to all determine, you know, with the moves they make before the trade deadline, because let's face it, I mean, I'm a realist. I don't see them being anywhere near a spot to where, you know, they're going to be buyers come the trade deadline. I mean, let's just be honest. It is what it is, but it's going to be interesting to see the moves that Dick Williams and the front office that they make, you know, when it comes down to it here coming up in the next few weeks and even months.
I mean, this team has been pretty scrappy, though, Chris, when you think about it. I mean, coming back on opening day against the Phillies, you know, they were – Saturday, they were getting blown out by St. Louis after getting routed on Friday night, and the team found a way to come back, win a game. Even today, they were down 2-0 and came back to take a lead at one point. So, you know, there's some scrappiness to this team that I like. And, you know, I think Brian Price is just trying to find something for these guys to grab onto. And there's different motivational tactics. And, you know, whatever he's doing is working so far. They just got to keep being scrappy. They got to keep being that team that won't give up, that finds a way. And it's a different guy every night, and you know, that's what they got to try to figure out how to do more consistently. And you never know. It's we're 12 games into 162 games, because 150 games left. Things happen. You really never know. And being 500 out the gate there's worse things. You could be the Twins.
You know what? That's very true. Very true. All is not lost. You could be the Twins. or the Braves, as they, you know, well, you know, they're a little bit better than what the Twins are right now. But I mean, they're both what 3-9, I believe, is what it is. Yeah, both teams 3-9. So yeah, it could be much worse. I'm with you. I'm 100% with you on that. But sometimes all you can do is shake your head on some of these things. But you know, overall, what's your biggest? I know we got it from Charlie. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to reconnect, which is, you know, he did a great job. I'm glad he was able to join us. Unfortunately, like I said, we haven't been able to reconnect here and get him back on. But definitely, it's something I think, like I said, I've worked with him in the past. I think, you know, having his input, especially, which is nice because, you know, he was able to provide an aspect, you know, from New York. I mean, something, you know, that we don't get, you know, from us. We get our own, you know, perceptions from, you know, this area, from, you know, 150-mile radius is what we get. And so it's kind of nice to get a perspective from someone outside of, you know, the Reds viewing area and basically who covers, you know, national baseball and, you know, baseball up in the Northeast. So it was great having him on and getting his perspective on the Reds. So, you know, I'm glad we were able to have him on. I know it's something I think, especially throughout the season, you know, Scott, I think we should definitely have him on more. Another guy who I was hoping to have on was Zach Ballard, who I think he's out in West Virginia, but he covers the Reds. He does a lot with the Cincinnati Reds and providing coverage for them as well. I think, you know, especially these next couple months, I think we're going to try and get some more, you know, some pretty good, you know, perspectives from numerous people around, especially around the sport. I think it's, you know, this is an interesting season of baseball so far, and especially with, you know, some of the players that have popped up and some of the teams that, you know, like we had mentioned, Baltimore. My God, Baltimore's 8-3. That was a team that, you know, that Charlie had mentioned as a surprise. The whole Trevor Story situation, you know, with what he's done so far. It's been it's been a pretty fun season, you know, already in these first two full weeks of baseball. So, and as we're going to head into the third week of baseball, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be pretty exciting as it has been so far. But, you know, I think
that's what's, you know, there's three teams tied up top out west and the Central's strong. You know, it's, parity is alive and well in baseball, which is something that is hard to believe when you don't have a salary cap. But yeah, it's fun. I think the start of baseball season brings a lot of hope. Some of that hope's been dashed already in the first 2 weeks for some franchise, but for most, it's still alive and well.
Yeah, and that is the beauty of baseball. You know, it is. You know, like they always say, you know, you can't win a division in April, but you can certainly lose it. And, you know, that's the same. And for teams like Minnesota, who start off 3-9 and Atlanta 3-9 as well, you know, the Marlins, who are 3-7, it's just like, you know, you got to be kidding me. You know, so it's all in all.
There's always next year.
When the Reds are on. What's that? Yeah, there is always next
There's
year.
There's always
right.
next year.
You're 100% right. I mean, yeah, we could be in that boat right there. Unfortunately for the Reds, you know, you're in the NL Central, which I think personally, I think that's the best division of baseball. I just think between them, it's tough because if you look at the American League this year, I mean, obviously the AL East, you know, is what it is with Boston and New York. But obviously with Toronto, with the strides that they've made, but then you look at the AL Central and kind of what the surprise, I mean, everyone is pretty much picking, and you know, that's the Royals division. The White Sox have come out and said, you know, hey, not so fast. You know, you're obviously closer to, you know, to Chicago than what I am, you know, geographically wise, I should say. Do you get any coverage, like where you are, about any of the Chicago stuff, or is it just still mainly the Cincinnati aspect of things?
We get some of it. I think what I find interesting about the White Sox is, one, they're 7-3 on the road to start the year. They've only played two home games. A team that can win 70% on the road is and the team that's someone that you're going to have to contend with. But, you know, with everything that happened with Adam LaRoche there towards the end of spring training, I find it fascinating that this team, and you find this in sports a lot, there's something that happens throughout the course of a season or beginning of a season that is able to bring a team together for one common cause. And that's always a challenge in team sports, is to get everyone to buy into one common cause. And, you know, I said it at the time when this happened, and Buster Olney from ESPN kind of alluded to this when he started covering it, that the team was ready to walk out on management when they pulled this. And it was the manager that brought the – Robin Ventura brought the team together and pretty much said, you know what, it's us against them, but we got to do it together. And they went out and they played for their skipper that day, and they're playing for him now. And I find it fascinating that they have the start that they have with the drama that happened towards the end of spring training around Adam LaRoche and that situation. And they may be onto something, that they now have something that they all are a part of and that they can do as a unit and have some camaraderie and do it in spite of management. And that's something that's tough to find, and it may be a spark that they needed and that they've found and that they may be able to ride for a while.
You know, that's very true. And I meant to ask you about that. Unfortunately, like I said, you know, schedule-wise, we just haven't been able to get together and get something up. But we're both fathers. We're both coaches. We've both played, you know, grew up playing sports, you know. What was your whole take on the Adam LaRoche situation? Did you, I guess, what's your thought on that? I mean, because there was a polarizing topic, right during that time, for them pretty much an entire week, you know, after that, because Chris Sale, I mean, you know, he's their ace. I mean, he's their Cy Young guy, you know, like he's their ace. And basically, all this, he's their ace. And he was absolutely livid. And like you were saying, that team was ready to walk out. I mean, what, you know, based off of that, what was your thought on all that? I mean, because it was a very polarizing topic.
So, you know, a couple of things on it. One, I think it's sad that a 14-year-old child got dragged into something like this, and that his name was out there in the public and being talked about by grown-ups on national television. I think that's disgusting. Secondly, my actual first thought was, does this kid not go to school? It's a 14-year-old kid in a baseball clubhouse every single day.
Yeah.
I was wondering if he ever went to stinking school.
I know.
My first thought. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but, you know, he's at spring training every day in Florida, but they live in Chicago. How is he being educated? He's 14 years old, blah, blah, blah.
I'm gonna go with homeschool. I don't know if that's true or not, but I
would hope he's not missing a ton of school. But I think the bigger picture here, Chris. Yeah, Chris Sale was very vocal about it. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, how many actual players were vocal about it? When you look at how many guys are in that clubhouse, it's a small minority. And I think, you know, I alluded to the fact that they were ready to walk out. There was a lot of guys that were just doing it just to not be the guy that everyone looks to and says, you're the one that complained.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said something. I think it was inappropriate. I don't think, as a father, I would not bring my child into, one, a locker room, knowing what goes on in the locker room every day.
And
more importantly, it is a workplace, and I think that needs to be respected. I think other people's opinions of a workplace need to be respected, and children aren't meant to be in a workplace on a daily basis. Yes, they can come in there maybe post game. I know a lot of families come into to locker rooms post game. That's a different animal, but at the same time, you're exposing a child to a lot of things in a locker room. You know, for one, you got grown men walking around naked. I don't think that's something that a 14-year-old should be exposed to. And it does, you know, there's profanity, vulgarity. I don't think I don't think a 14-year-old should have been exposed to that type of stuff. But at the same time, you're also making people uncomfortable because they can't interact in a way that they probably would or want to.
Yeah.
And I think that is the underlying problem, is when a workplace becomes somewhere that somebody cannot, or somebody feels they cannot act in a way that they feel appropriate, that's when the issue comes in. I think that's what Kenny Williams saw, and I think that's why he may have said something. And I respect Adam LaRoche for saying, you know what, I've had enough. I want to be with my family and walk away. And he's made some comments recently where he said, I understand, you know, I wanted to be near my family. The White Sox, it was in my contract and whatnot. And he said, maybe I shouldn't have had him there every day, but I wanted him there every day. And I get it. And I'm glad it hasn't gotten as messy as it probably could have, but
exactly.
You know, I think,
yep.
I think I understand the White Sox point of view. And, I don't think he should have.
I see both sides of it, to be honest with you. I think, you know, like you said, it wasn't. It's a very sticky situation when it comes, you know. I see why Adam LaRoche, you know, God, a ball player, my God, you're on the road as much as you are. You never see your family. You know, you rarely see him. So I get where he's coming from. I get where the White Sox are coming from. It's one of those situations to where it's not that, like, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it, like, not that both sides are wrong or right in this situation, but it's interesting because, you know, and like you said, you're glad that, and I, you know, as am I, that it did not get as ugly as it could have. I mean, it could have been really, really bad. I mean, but, you know, thankfully it didn't. So, you know, it's one of those things to where, you know, thankfully it didn't, you know, it didn't escalate to something like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a lose-lose situation. You know, the White Sox are trying to have an environment that's suitable for everybody. And you know, you're somebody who wants to be around the family, you can't fault the guy for that. Obviously,
yeah.
We both understand, you know, the demands of families and sports. But, you know, I wish it wouldn't have gotten public. And, you know, the sad part is if he wouldn't have retired, it never would have gotten public. But that's the decision
yeah.
he made. And I think by him retiring, it made it a bigger deal than it probably was.
Yeah, you're right. I would have to agree with that. I definitely agree with that sentiment right there. Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, it was very, very interesting situation. You know, so. Actually, I just got an alert to say NFL rumors, Broncos and Von Miller are not close on extension. Well, that's great. Fantastic. Jeez. A Broncos, I'll tell you what. But
because he's at joinman.com. He can't read the paperwork.
I don't even want to touch on that situation. I don't want to touch on not a fan. Can't stand me. I can't stand Johnny Manziel at all. But regardless. But I think here it's you know, kind of get close to wrapping up. I got early morning ahead of me here for work, but I do want to touch on something that, you know, that you did, you and your team accomplished, once again, you, my friend, and I got to congratulate you once again. Now this is the perfect time to do it. You did it again, man. You, my friend, have won another national championship. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate that.
I mean, I never thought I'd say this, but you did it again. Like, I couldn't believe you did it the first time. And then you did it again. Like, you know, like I told you, after the first time you won it, no matter how many times, no matter what you do to screw up, you're always going to be known as a championship-winning coach. Like, man, that's impressive. Like, and you did it again, man. Congratulations.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, and we're in the process of designing our rings, and it's a process that never gets old, and I'm dragging out as long as possible. And I never thought I'd have a dilemma of where I can wear a second ring on my hand. And, yeah, it's a nice problem to have. So yeah, it's been a fun couple weeks, and something that we all were happy and thrilled about. And this one was obviously we were able to enjoy it a lot more, and it was a special group of girls. It was something that that we really relished and are still relishing in.
But you know, like they say, the first one's always fun, but then it's the ones following that are better. Because, you know, you won, and then the following season you didn't. You fell short of that goal. With the team that was loaded, you know, so it's you truly, you know, it makes you step back and truly appreciate the hard work that goes into everything and what it takes to win. Period. I mean, whether it's a conference championship, a national championship, just whatever, it truly makes you appreciate that. And that's, you can definitely tell that's what happened this season. And, you know, man, now are we going to be drinking from the cup again, or how's that going to work out? Because, you know, we did it
yeah.
the first time.
You're by, oh, yeah, absolutely. You're by.
Okay,
April.
Good. I just want to make sure.
The first one was a surprise. I mean, we were still that year. We're still trying to earn respect, and you know, to be honest, we never got it until we actually won. You know, there's people still doubting us even up through the national championship game. So it was a surprise. We never really expected us to do it that year. We knew we had the talent. We thought we were a year or two away. So it was more of it was hard to describe it as shock that we actually did it. And then it's always a challenge to follow it up. And, you know, we played for it last year and just fell short in the title game. But being there, we knew what it takes. You know, we played for the title last 2 years. So this year we knew what it took to get there. Our girls were prepared for that. They knew the challenge that they had. And we were no longer a surprise to people. So it made us elevate our game because – you know, we're no longer trying to get respect. We're trying to keep respect. And you play with some sort of desperation when you have that target on your back. And, you know, the girls bought into to what we were trying to preach and, you know, the concept. And that's what I was talking about with the White Sox, kind of along the same lines. When you have something, you rally everyone around together. And that's what we had. And they really bought into it. It was a fun ride. It was a fun year. We were talking about it just the other day. We really feel like we're able to enjoy this one more. And to send our three seniors out who were catalysts for our program and kind of getting us started, they were really our first recruiting class. To send them out champions is something that we'll never forget.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. I mean, that's, you know, What's that? You were breaking up there. What was that?
Did you watch the game, by the way?
I did. And the problem was, you know, the funny thing is I was headed over to Krista's mom's house for dinner. And I'm just going to say, yeah, I was watching the game while I was driving. And then when you guys went to overtime, I shut off my phone, so it's just not a good I'm not a good role model when it comes to this, but when it went to overtime, I was like, oh man, and I was literally like, it was probably 10-15 minutes away from our mom's house, so I get there, whatever, and I kid you not, I get in the house and I go to turn on to turn it back on. So I missed the game-winning goal because I literally turned it on like seconds after you guys had scored. And I was like, I looked and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I cannot believe it just happened. But I got all the post-celebration and everything like that, which was awesome in and of itself. But, yeah, I missed the goal because I should have just left it running and watched it all the way through. But I you know what? I was trying to be safe. I figured I drove an entire commute watching a hockey game. I should probably, you know, take it down a couple notches. So anyone listening, I would recommend that you don't do that because it's one, not safe, and two, it's probably against the law somewhere. So I wouldn't recommend
doing
that.
Did you watch the semifinal game at all?
Oh yeah, well, I only caught a couple minutes of that game. I forget what we had going on that.
One of the best college hockey games I've ever seen. It was just the level of talent on the ice was unbelievable, and it's still available. You could still watch the full games. They're still online if you ever want to. We watched them a few times.
Oh, that's awesome!
But,
I remember talking to you after that. I mean, you know, once you were headed, you know, once that game was over, you know, I remember talking to you, and you were just talking about how amazing of a game that was, and how lucky, you know, you were, you know, to be in that position again. I mean, it's, you know, you had quite the ride this year. It was an interesting season for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we lost four games, but only to two teams. I mean, it just speaks volumes to how tough our league is. But you know, I mean, we challenged ourselves. We played the toughest schedule in the country, and we ended up only losing four games and winning 23. So, you know, we challenged ourselves, and I really believe that us playing the toughest schedules we had, it prepared us for the national tournament, and we were not overwhelmed or shocked or surprised by anything we saw. We expected it all, and we had faced it and prepared for it, and we were fully ready, and they proved it. So I appreciate the congratulations. It was a lot of fun, and we'll definitely be having another beverage from that cup, because it's gotten bigger and heavier since last time.
Oh, really? Well, good. I'm excited for that challenge. It was fun the first time, I'll tell you that. I mean, that was definitely a happy birthday to us. So,
sure.
I mean, that was fun.
All right, my friend.
A lot of fun. So, yeah.
It was a lot of fun. I know maybe we'll do a live one on Wednesday morning, but we will get together in person on Wednesday, and I look forward to that as well.
Yes, indeed. And it's been a while, man. It's definitely been a while. But, yeah, we could probably work some out and do a podcast. You know, hey, we may even we can do one live from the game. I mean, it's, you know, we'll figure it out.
From the Machine Room Grill, Hicks and Chris on sports.
Hey, live on remote. I like that. We can let's make it happen.
All right, buddy.
So,
we'll see you on Wednesday.
That works, man. Have yourself a good one. And with that. I believe we're going to be wrapping up this show. You know, it was, you know, it felt good to get back in the, get back from some of the things. And again, I want to thank Hixie for joining me here tonight. And especially a big thanks to Charlie Roulet from DoubleGSports.com. I truly appreciate him coming on. I was chatting with him today. And I'm just thankful he was able to come on and provide his insight, you know, from a whole different region. So I truly appreciate him for that. So, you know, again, thank you guys. You can always check us out and follow me on Twitter at I am Chris Asbrock. Hixie, you can also follow him at Coach MUWM Hockey. That's his Twitter handle. You can also check us out at Hixie and Chris on Sports. That's on our Twitter. You can follow, you know, you can follow me and like my page on Facebook. It's Chris Asbrock Blogger. Check that one out. Also, you can make sure you check out feeltheimpactsports.com. I got a couple things, you know, hopefully coming up in the pipeline last couple things, actually, I should say. You know, so again, I'll make sure you check that out. Make sure you follow me on Twitter. I do some Periscope as well, but not too often. I need to get, you know, especially a lot more coming up here soon. But with baseball season, it's been pretty tough. But thank you guys so much for checking us out. Like I said, we are, we're brought to you proudly by Caledonia Chic Designs. Again, it's a Cincinnati-based jewelry company. It's offering fashion for men and women, unique and affordable jewelry designs. Like I said, Donna does a phenomenal job. Each piece is handmade, and it's one of a kind. She does custom orders, and she ships worldwide, so make sure you check out her on Facebook. It's Caledonia, ChicDesigns.com. you know, like I said, or, you know, that same name on Facebook as well. So make sure you check her out. She does a phenomenal job. So, like I said, we are, you know, thankfully partner with her. She does, like I said, just a phenomenal job. So with that being said, we look to be coming back hopefully here. You know, I want to try to get, you know, more of these shows uploaded as you know, as many as possible. I know there's a big UFC card coming up this Saturday night. I'm hoping to try and get something up for that as well. So thank you guys so much for, you know, for checking this out. I'm hoping to get this, you know, somehow posted up onto on iTunes. So, you know, thank you guys again for checking this out. Make sure you check out the website. Make sure you follow on Twitter. So thank you guys so much. And with that being said, until next time, we will talk to you later on.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.